We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Well, hello, hello, and welcome to Fluffy, home of the fun, frivolous, lowbrow fluff that your group chat excels at. We're here to talk about the best things in the world of pop culture, from celebrities to influencers and all of the nonsense in between. And you're, of course, joined by me, Al, a London-based 28-year-old writer who spends a lot of time chatting and reading about the fun, silly topics that maybe your boss, your parents, your partner, whoever, questions why you enjoy so much. Each week, we're going to be talking about the best bits that pop culture has to offer, and this is your safe space to enjoy, dissect, and binge on the frothy nonsense that brings you a smile. Hi all, how are you all doing? How is everybody? I have just come back from some time in Lanzarote, and whilst I'm not that tanned, I can confirm it was very sunny, it was very warm, it was very windy, as always, and it was just utterly lovely. I spent some time reading, I played a lot of cards, we went for some walks along the coast. There were a lot of cocktails drank, there was a lot of good food eaten. It was so nice. If you have the chance to go away, even if I just mean it, if you have a chance to just not work for a few days in a row, please take it. It is so good for your brain. My stress levels are on the floor. It's fantastic. I'm sure next week I'll be as frazzled as normal. But for now, I'm still riding that holiday high and I can't stop smiling. But enough of that. Before we get into the brain rot, I have to admit, guys, that I got something wrong. And this is the news that Katie and Orlando have confirmed they have split. This took place last week, and 2 or 3 weeks ago, I got onto this podcast and very adamantly said that I did not think we would hear news of this split before 2026. And this is because Katie's had a really rough start to 2025, or the rough first half of 2025, if I'm going to be entirely honest. She was criticised for her involvement in the SpaceX trip. I think that's what it was called, her trip to space. She was criticised for her single Women's World and the production team behind that. Her album that Women's World is a part of didn't do particularly well, and it's been reported that her ticket sales for her upcoming tour have not been overly strong either. So she's had a lot of bad press concentrated within 6 months, and my argument was that even if they have split, which I think we all suspected they had, Katie's team, or Katie and Orlando's teams, wouldn't want to put the spotlight on her any more than it already was. And so we'd want to give her 6 to 8 months of breathing room to recover her dented reputation, to take her out of the spotlight, to give her some space before they were both thrust back in when this news broke. This obviously was incorrect. I wasn't right here, because they have announced it. And they announced it in a joint statement they shared with US media outlets, where they shared that they were shifting their relationship over to being co-parents, and that this had been taking place across many months. And that, of course, their continued priority was their daughter Daisy, and basically making sure that she felt loved, supported, you know, had a stable home, all of those kind of things. What I did find interesting, though, is that the statement also shared that this news was only being released because of an abundance of recent interest and conversation surrounding their relationship. Which, to me, means that they weren't planning on breaking this news in 2025, but felt they had to because of the heat the news or the rumours were getting. And so I realised I've shot myself in the foot here, because if we'd all stayed quiet, they probably would have waited until 2026, as I said they would, to break this news. But because we have all, myself included, been chatting away about this for some time now, they felt the need to take control of the narrative, which is obviously their right to do so, and I can imagine many a reason as to why they would want to. And so they've taken control of the narrative by releasing this statement. So I was both wrong and right. But I'll take it that I got it wrong. But interesting, and I thought I had to own up to it. So that's where we are. We're going to move on from that now. We're going to dive in to the best of the brain rot, which are the silly stories that got us talking this week. Our first story is something silly, and this is just the mind-bending cost of Jeff Bezos's and Lauren Sanchez's recent wedding in Venice. To give you an understanding of how this money accumulated, there were estimated to be 200 people on the guest list, and this wedding took place across 3 days. So 3 days of celebration, with guests including everybody from sort of Bill Gates to Oprah Winfrey. So people who were, you know, they're used to luxury. Forbes has estimated that the wedding costs anywhere between $20 and $25 million, which is more than 600 times the cost of an average American wedding. And they base these stats on sort of wedding industry sources, including Venetian wedding industry insiders. So I'm pretty trustworthy of the stats they've got here. And they believe this money was spent in a number of ways, including having the Aman Hotel in Venice booked up for the full 3 nights, every room by the happy couple, so that their guests could stay there for the entire celebration. An average cost for a room at this hotel is $2,000 a night, which adds up to $900,000 for 3 nights, assuming that all 150 rooms were booked. The couple's wedding planners also commissioned about 30 private water taxis to escort guests around the city. And it's believed each taxi costs anywhere between $210 and $290 per hour. So you're looking at, again, a cost of $270,000 spent on water transport alone. The wedding was also believed to have been catered by a 3-star Michelin chef, who, for including staff and food transport, was charging $1,800 per person or per head. So again, that's another $360,000 in food and beverage costs for one night. But they, Forbes suspect it was more like a 3-day contract. So you're looking at closer to $1.1 million spent on food and beverage alone. It's also believed the happy couple gave each of their guests an arrangement of local goods and pastries, as well as hand-blown glass. So you've got to factor that in. And then to spread goodwill in Venice with like local charities and residents, etc., although if I'm honest, I don't think it really worked, Jeff apparently also donated around $3.6 million that he split across 3 organisations. He gave $1.2 million to an agency that coordinates research for the care of the Venetian Lagoon. He gave another $1.2 million to UNESCO's Venice office. And he gave another $1.2 million to the Venice International University. So what's wild, right, is that's a huge amount of money to spend. Like, mind-boggling numbers. Money I will never see in my lifetime. And, you know, even if I earned more than my wildest dreams, money that my kids would not see. Like, this, like, generational wealth doesn't even touch this. Like, huge amounts of money. But what's absolutely crackers is this is not the most expensive wedding in sort of recent billionaire, millionaire-esque weddings. In 2004, the second richest person in India spent $60 million on a wedding for their daughter in Paris. In 2023, we obviously had the absolutely huge wedding that went viral over TikTok that also took place in Paris, particularly at the Palace of Versailles. That was Madeleine Brockway's. It's not been confirmed how much she spent there, and she obviously went completely under the radar post-wedding when her husband went to jail, but it's believed that it was more than $25 million. And then in 2024, the son of India's richest person had a wedding that cost between $400 million and $500 million. And this was the wedding where, like, Rihanna performed and Kim Kardashian went. And, you know, people who had never met this man before in their life were going, because I suspect they were paid to. Incomprehensible, like, life-changing, generation-changing wealth. More wealth than some countries have. And maybe that's an exaggeration, I don't know. But so much money. They're spending so much money on these weddings. So I'm both mind-blown by Jeff Bezos' wedding, but also the man went humble, you know? He pinched his pennies and he kept within the budget, and you can respect that. I can confirm, if I ever get married, I will be spending nowhere near $20 million on it. Our second story is, of course, the news that Khloe Kardashian has shared details about the plastic surgery she has had. And not only did she share details, she also shared the doctors' names for who had done what, including, I think, tagging them on Instagram, if they were on Instagram. And she shared this as a comment on a reel that an aesthetics doctor had posted, talking about the work that he suspected that she had done. And we've all seen these videos, they're very engaging. They bring sort of both the fans and also the haters who just want to just discuss her body, discuss a celeb's body, tear that body apart, criticize it, bitch about it, you name it. It brings both sides of the coin to the comment section, and therefore, you know, hugely engaging, very viral content. We all know what I'm talking about. In the comment itself, she shared that she had had a nose job, laser hair removal, Botox, Sculptra to remove a tumour in her cheek, soft wave to tighten her skin, she's experimented with filler, she's had a baby thread lift, she has had facials, including one that's becoming increasingly popular, which is, of course, the salmon sperm facial. And I don't know yet anybody who's had this done in my own life, but I have seen it grow in popularity on the internet. I have no idea how they get the salmon sperm. I have no idea how ethical it is. I suspect not overly, but I could be wrong. So a new one, but one she felt the need to share, and I get that. And I think that's an important detail. She shares something that is very relatable or very of the moment and very achievable for a lot of people. And she also added that in 2025, there are many other things we can do before surgery, but when it's time, and if I choose to, I know some great doctors. And this is a completely new approach for the Kardashians or Kardashian-Jenners. They never used to share what they'd had done in regards to plastic surgery before. Like, this is a real 180. And her comment on this Instagram reel comes just weeks after Kylie Jenner shared details about her boob job as a comment on a TikTok by a woman who basically said, "Please share the details, your boobs look incredibly natural, and I'd love to know what you had done." And I don't think we talked about it on Frothy at the time, but Kylie shared the details, and they were, and I'm going to read it here, 445cc, moderate profile, half under the muscle, silicone, Gareth Fisher, who is of course the name of the doctor. And then she went, "Hope this helps, lol." Which I kind of loved, because it just made me feel like she is one of us. people of a certain age definitely still text like that. And she not only showed her age, but kind of made her very human, which I also think is a very clever point and something to be thought about. And as I said, this is a complete 180 approach on their previous sort of discussion or lack of discussion around the work they'd had done. You know, Kylie is the woman that up until 2015 completely denied having lip filler and claimed that her signature look, you know, her beautiful lips, were just the result of overlining her lips and then of her lip kits. And I'm sure my best friend won't mind me saying, but at one point, Han had every shade going of the Kylie Jenner lip kit, and as stunning as my best friend is, she never once had lips like Kylie's. You know, despite the overlining, despite the colours, anything and everything, it just, Han's lips never look like Kylie's, because again, Han does not have filler because we were about 14, and Kylie did. A quick breakdown of what her boob job actually means, or what the comment actually means. So 445cc is the size of the implant. It's of course measured in cubic centimetres, and anything over 400 is apparently often considered large. Obviously that depends somewhat on your frame, but I think it's fair to say on Kylie's frame they do appear quite large, and so she has gone for quite a curvy look on purpose. Profile is in reference to how the implant looks or how it juts out from your body while standing. And a moderate profile is apparently considered like quite one of the sort of more natural profiles to get. Half under the muscle means that the upper part of the breast implant is inserted below the pectoral muscle, while the lower part is just under the breast tissue. And again, this is seen as one of the more natural styles somebody can go for. And then silicone is obviously the material that the implant is made of. And again, apparently silicone is one of the more comparable or most comparable products and materials and feels to breast tissue itself. So all kind of very natural looking or feeling. And as I said, this is a completely new approach for the Kardashians or the Kardashian-Jenners. And I've ummed and ahed about whether or not I think this is a planned tactic. I think in some ways it's incredibly calculated, and I don't think they're that calculated. But on the flip side, I do think they're that calculated, and I have turned myself in circles thinking about this. And I think what I've come to the conclusion is that they have understood that they cannot deny having had work done, because we're all so much wiser to it than we were, you know, 15 to 20 years ago. And so there's no way they can deny it. Granted, going from acknowledging work to naming in detail everything you've had done, the doctors who did it, is a real jump. But I don't think they have named everything they've had done. And because of that, I do think their decision to start sharing these details is a planned decision, because I think it's more detail than has ever been shared before. And I'd argue that a lot of what Chloe has shared in particular edged more towards like tweakments as opposed to major work. And don't get me wrong, trust what she said is truthful. I don't think it's the entire picture. I'll be honest, I don't think the change in look that she has had from 10 years ago to now can be achieved just by tweakments. I suspect she's had more major work done. But again, I'm not an expert, so that's just my own opinion on this. And I think the decision to share details on these tweakments or on Kylie's boob job, I think is threefold. I think that it keeps them relevant, it keeps them in the conversation and prevalent within pop culture. Case in point, we're talking about it here. I think it adds a relatability to their image that they've not always had, but I think their viewing is more necessary and more needed than ever. And I think it keeps the parasocial relationship between themselves and their fans, or even themselves and their haters, incredibly strong. And this is essential for success in the world of pop culture. And I think for those reasons, that is why they also won't share whether or not they've had bigger work done. Because I think these tweakments, and as well as a boob job, which I understand is more major work, but I think these are relatable, achievable, and affordable to the majority of the public. Granted, you'd probably have to save up for some of this work, but I think that most people, if they wanted work done, could achieve it and afford this. And that builds that parasocial relationship, that builds that connection with the Kardashians, and that keeps people talking about them, which I think is obviously what they need. That's how they build their income, that's what they rely on, despite their side projects. And so I think it was a decision that they made. I think by putting this detail, dropping these details in comments, that is again a decision to be made. You know, they're talking about it naturally, it's a very organic, someone asked, I gave them the details rather than I'm talking about myself and I'm sharing all of my social accounts. And again, that builds that parasocial relationship. But what I think is also really interesting is I don't think this applies to Chris. And I think that is why, or partly why, Chris was okay sharing the details of the doctor who gave her her new face. Because let's be honest, it's a brand new face. The work is stunning. She looks incredible. She does look 25. She obviously isn't 25. And, I mean, a very skilled surgeon. But I think Chris has less to worry about. I don't think Chris needs to be relatable. And I don't think Chris has the same parasocial relationship with the fans and people who watch the show and the general public as her daughters do. And I don't think she needs it. You know, Chris has always been the matriarch there, has always sort of run the business. And her daughters have always been the assets. And therefore, they're the ones that need to be engaged with, liked, approachable, and as I said, have those parasocial relationships. That's not needed from her. So she can have this major work done and talk about it and not have to worry about the backlash or the potential change in her image that may come with this news, in the same way that people like Kylie would have to worry about it. And so it also wouldn't surprise me if in a couple of years down the road, maybe Chris has some other major work done and will share the details again, because she doesn't have to. It's a different dynamic. She doesn't have to worry about it. Whereas I think any major work that any of the other women have, they will not share for some time and will only share when maybe it again becomes more affordable, achievable, the norm, more people are doing it. And then they'll say, oh yeah, I also had a mummy makeover or whatever it is. And we'll go from there. Our third story is an article in Vulture that caught my eye titled, Brad Pitt is Fooling You. And honestly, it's one of the best articles I've read recently. I would thoroughly recommend giving it your time if you can. I'm going to link it in the show notes. And it tracks both Brad's recent press tour for the new F1 movie, as well as his very cleverly curated attempt to reinvent his image. And in case you're sat there going, why would he need to reinvent his image? I want to remind you that in December last year, him and Angelina Jolie finalized their divorce, 8 years after she originally filed back in 2016. And she filed for this divorce 5 years after an alleged incident on their private jet where she claimed that he had thrown her against a wall, had shaken her and then poured alcohol on her while she was trying to sleep, and that when their children tried to defend her, Brad had also apparently assaulted one of them. 9 years on, it's being reported that the children who have turned 18 are dropping Pitt from their surname, so they're no longer being double-barreled. Whether this is true of all of their children, I'm not quite sure. But yeah, really interesting, quite dark, very serious stuff, and something that has been in the spotlight and out of the spotlight for basically 8 years. So really quite intense and quite the story to try and sort of shift, or quite the status and the public perception to try and shift. But back to the article. In case you've missed it, Brad is, of course, on the press tour for the new F1 movie. He plays the lead in that role. And as part of that press tour, he recently made an appearance on Armchair Expert Dax Shepard's podcast or interview show, whatever you want to call it. The interview covered a load of things, including Brad's clothing brand, God's True Cashmere, his early career in education, his childhood, and his time in AA. And it's very clear that this interview is incredibly supportive of his work to reinvent his image, which is, of course, the brainchild of his crisis management publicist, Matthew Hiltzik. And it seems like the pair are really trying to bring Brad's status back to sort of his early 2000s, where he was seen as, you know, the cool movie star guy, the chilled movie star guy, the people's prince. That, you know, he was incredibly popular, he was very loved. He had a real aesthetic and vibe that people, I think especially women, really loved him for. Obviously, a far cry from what he is currently known for. And so I think they're really working to bring him back to that. The article made some really clever points about their work here, both pointing out that his current sort of buzz cut is very similar to the hairstyle he had when he was filming Troy and Mr. and Mrs. Smith, as well as the fact that for the London premiere of the F1 movie, he actually was photographed with Tom Cruise, who was his co-star in Interview with a Vampire, and who, you know, they have not been seen together or photographed together publicly since 2001. And so it's a real reunion shot, it's a real chance to have side-by-side photos compared, and again, brings people back to the early 2000s or early noughties Brad, and, you know, really sort of builds a sense of nostalgia around him that helps muffle any of the bad press that is potentially still tied to his image. The F1 press tour has obviously been very carefully curated, and the article labels it as such, stating that the tour is a carefully tuned charm offensive meant to obscure, if not outright bury, the alleged violent particulars of his behaviour towards ex-wife Angelina Jolie. At one point, the article also says, Pitt has been so successful at this rehabilitation that most of the public don't even understand what he's trying to rehabilitate himself for. And in this interview on Armchair Expert, he really presents himself as a changed or like a mellowed or a matured man who, you know, is sober, who loves cashmere, and who, and he said this several times, is looking to have more green in his life. What I think is really interesting is that that's the focus. Like, the focus is his here and now, as opposed to what he has changed or matured from. And his past and those details and his reasons for going to AA are definitely talked around as opposed to talked in focus about. And what really struck me was a final line from the piece, which said, his deftness in removing the spectre of violence from his own narrative is a reminder of the ways violence against women is normalised. It isn't that people don't believe in what happened to Jolie on that plane, they just don't care. And I fundamentally agree with the author. This interview, you know, this Armchair Expert interview had me smiling. I liked Brad Pitt in this interview. It was a very easy conversation to listen to, it's very surface level, so there's minimal info to take offence to. And if you don't know the details about his divorce, then it's really easy to take this interview and see him as an interesting, cheerful, carefree, down-to-earth guy who just loves acting and fast cars and cashmere and is happy to let both Dax and his producer Monica take a sip from his coffee. They all share the same straw at the very start of this interview. You know, he comes across as the most laid-back guy, happy to share everything, wanting to talk about the small stuff as well as some bigger stuff. And of course, the interview is self-indulgent, well, a little self-indulgent and self-righteous, but it's meant to be, you know. It's a conversation about Brad designed to make him look good, and that's exactly what it does. It's also a little bit of a bros club at parts, which would normally turn me off, but the fact that the interview didn't turn me off, I think shows the successful persona that Brad is is portraying and showing the audience. And that kind of bros club comes from the sort of camaraderie between Dax and Brad about going to the same AA meeting, sharing helicopter rides, talking about riding motorbikes around tracks. And, you know, we get the gist from the conversation that at some point he was badly behaved, which is why he decided to go to AA. But at no point are these decisions or this bad behaviour deep-dived or even hinted at being anything more than being like sort of slightly naughty. You know, there's no reference to the fact that Brad has the capacity, or supposedly has the capacity, to be, you know, to act genuinely awfully, to act violently, to assault close family members. That is never referenced, talked about, anything of the sort. And I just think that if you took this interview at face value, you'd have no idea of what he'd been accused of and the violence that supposedly took place behind closed doors. And that, to me, is absolutely wild. It's also crazy to me that this interview took place in this style, because Dax's persona publicly is very much of a family man. You know, he has been married for decades. He has two daughters that, you know, him and his wife Kristen talk about in a very little beloved manner. He went on a honeymoon with Kristen Stewart, obviously, when they got married. They made a whole music video to Africa, the song, while they were in Africa during the rainy season. And it's still up on YouTube. It has millions of views. It's a really funny watch. I'd recommend it. I might link it in the show notes. But point being, Dax being such a family man and then having somebody whose public character or whose actual character is such a stark opposite, and then not talking about that, is a real surprise to me. And it points to me that this is a very Brad Pitt-led interview as opposed to a fair or equal footing. And I suspect, you know, conversation topics and questions were pre-agreed beforehand. It was made very clear that this wouldn't go ahead if there was any sort of conversation around the divorce or anything that led up to the divorce. And I think that makes it a very clever move on Brad's team's front, because they're effectively writing his divorce and his relationship with Angelina Jolie out of his story. You know, there's conversation about actions pre-Jolie, and there's conversations about recent actions post-Jolie, but those years in between are not talked about at all. And I think if you didn't know he was married, you wouldn't clock they were missing, but they are missing. So his team are keeping enough of the grit of the bad boy so that he can, you know, his past pre-AA, to enable them to build a reformed bad boy image for him without actually bringing some of the really awful stuff back into the conversation. I think it's very clever. I think it's worked very well. And I would agree with the title, the headline of the piece, that he is fooling all of us. And as I said, like, I'm well aware of his background. I know what took place or what has been reported to have taken place. And I still enjoyed the interview. I still sat there and smiled and responded to his body language subconsciously. It's a very clever piece. Please read it. His team are doing a remarkable job. Do I agree with it? No. Do I think it's working? Yes. I'd love to know what you think, though. And I'd love to know if you think you'll remember the fact that he got divorced under such circumstances in another 12 months or so, or if you think actually the hard work here is really going to pay off and we're all just going to brush it under the carpet and let him continue as normal. Up next, guys, it's time for Pop to Pin, which is like a shallow dive this week and I'm hoping to come back to. Last week, I popped a pin in the Guardian's article, "My mind was shrieking, what am I doing?" when the digital nomad dream turned sour. What I would say is, while yes, it's an interesting piece, it's a smidge depressing, it's a little bit too long in my opinion, and it's somewhat repetitive. I did enjoy the read, but I don't think it's worth your time. And I think it says what we all suspect, that, you know, the digital nomad dream is fun until all of a sudden it's too much admin. Something goes wrong, whether that's sickness or an unplanned emergency. You don't have your family and friends, you know, your village around you. And then all of a sudden it's an absolute nightmare and you just want to go home. I think we could have all told ourselves that. But that's what the article confirms. And it's an interesting read. I don't think it's worth recounting too much of it, but what I would say is that I am definitely not suited to that lifestyle. Having read a bit more about it, I like structure, I like a step-by-step plan, I like a goal, And the nomad lifestyle seems to be the complete opposite of sort of chilled, relaxed, go where the wind takes you kind of vibe. And as my boyfriend will confirm, that's not me. I need a detailed, timed, organized list. And yeah, not fit to be a nomad or a digital nomad whatsoever. If you are, I take my hat off to you, because it's a level of chilled and relaxed I'm never going to reach. And then something I've popped a pin in this week is a podcast episode from 30 and Thriving with the actor Mia McKenna-Bruce. If you don't know who Mia is, she, I believe, is around my age, if not a smidge younger. And she was a child star. I grew up with her on the TV, sort of CBBC, that kind of thing. And has gone on to be quite a successful adult actress. Nope, that sounds like she's a porn star. That is not what I meant. I just meant she's not a child star anymore. But either way, she is going from strength to strength. She's a very talented actress, I think, and or actor, whatever term she prefers. And I hadn't realised she'd done this interview, but I was advertised it on Instagram. And what I watched from the clip, or what I found out from the clip, is that she actually quit acting at age 18, moved to Australia for a bit, and then decided that actually acting was her passion, so moved back to the UK to pursue it once more, and somewhat struggled to get back into the world after having left it for a year, 18 months or so. Really interesting, very fascinating. I really like Mia, so I'm interested in learning more, and I'm hopefully going to squeeze that episode in at some point this week, and I will come back and tell you whether or not it's worth your time. Of course, it wouldn't be a frothy episode without a couple of recommendations. My first recommendation actually ties in really well to our second story. And this is an article in The Times titled, "Britain is Obsessed with Beauty Procedures. These Figures Prove It." And it leads with the subheadline, "The industry is growing 4 times faster than the wider economy, and we're spending more on it than football, the gym and amusement parks combined." Which, while yes, I get the impact of, how much is the average person spending in an amusement park or on amusement parks annually? Because the last time I went to one, I had train track braces on, and I only remember that because I remember how much pain I was in from the toothache the entire trip. So that was more than a decade ago. I am 28. I think I had my train tracks taken off at 15, 14 maybe. So, you know, this was years and years ago. Are the rest of you going to amusement parks and not telling me? I didn't really realise it was such a thing. Just utterly threw me. But that aside, one fact I did find really interesting about the piece is that the annual report compiled by Oxford Economics, the consultancy, said the beauty industry was growing 4 times faster than the wider UK economy, taking its overall value to 30.4 billion, and that this was because of the normalisation of tweakments, particularly across or among younger men. And that's what surprised me, that it's younger men driving this, because I don't think I know any younger man, so I'd argue that's men 35 and below, who are taking part in tweakments. And obviously, maybe they all are and I'm just not being told. Or I've not asked, or I've not been told. But I couldn't have told you that. I would not have put money on it being younger men. I would have put money on it being women, because we see it so normalised in pop culture with celebrities and influencers. But apparently, according to the article, a recent study found that 23% of 18 to 34-year-old men have had either Botox, fillers or dental veneers, compared with only 21% of women of the same age. So, yeah, mind absolutely blown. I think it's a really interesting article, and I'm going to need a link in the show notes because I think it's worth your time, as I always say. Yeah, mind-blowing, and I'm still reeling from it. And then my second recommendation, you guys, and I'm nothing if not a creature of habit and also widely predictable, and it's, of course, Secret Lives of Mum and Wives, the reunion episode, which came out earlier this week. It's an hour and a half long. I watched it while tidying, and I won't lie, it did not feel like an hour and a half whatsoever. And it's just a fun watch if you liked the show. The whole vibe is a lot less argumentative and a lot more emotional. So if that's not really your vibe, then it's not, maybe not for you. I'd also say if you've not watched any of the other episodes from the show, this reunion episode is definitely not for you at all. But I really enjoyed it. And I also really liked seeing how the husbands and partners interact with each other and talk about that everything goes on sort of behind the scenes, because they brought them out later on in the episode. So they sat sort of backstage for a while and just watched the women discuss what had gone on during the series. And I really liked hearing their sort of unfiltered thoughts and opinions. So I'd give it a watch if you've not yet. I think it's worth your time. Obviously, it's not quite the same as the rest of the series because it's not a reality episode as such, but thoroughly enjoyable. And they included a teaser trailer for series 3. And guys, I'm pumped. As expected, I am ready already. If you got this far, thank you so, so much. It's, of course, a small independent podcast, so please do tell a friend or subscribe so you're the first to know when next week's episode drops. It really helps us in the charts. And you can, of course, find more absolute nonsense from me on TikTok or Instagram at Frothy Podcast. I hope to see you there. Have a lovely week, guys. Bye.